Lesson 3, we're in this lesson where Jesus is calling his followers. So it's kind of a time that's early in his ministry. And yet he is beginning to have now a reputation. There are those who know who he is, both from the teaching of John the Baptist out by the Jordan and from the things that Jesus is starting to say. He's making his own reputation now as time goes on. In our last class together a couple of weeks ago, we started looking at some passages in John chapter 1. We'll be going there again because we have some more to look at there. John chapter 1. And the calling of some of the first disciples here of Jesus. There was Andrew who was called and Jesus called to follow him, and he did. He went and told his brother Simon and they're quickly followers here of Jesus. Some significance, I think, to the fact that the text would tell us, and they followed him. And we talked a little bit about the fact, well, what would cause them just to drop what they were doing and to follow Jesus? Well, some of our discussion was they must have known something about who Jesus was. John the Baptist, as we said, had already been teaching the Christ. The Messiah was close by. The kingdom of God is at hand. And as we said, Jesus now is starting to have some reputation of his own. The next day, Jesus goes out again and searching for, and he found Philip, and he told Philip to do the same thing, follow me. And Philip did. Then Philip goes and tells his brother, Nathanael, saying, could this be the one we've been looking for? Could this be the Messiah? Which gives us some indication then and some clue that these were men who were looking for something. They knew something about the Old Testament scriptures, the prophecies, you know, concerning the coming of the Messiah. And they were looking. And we talked some about the fact that surely there are some even in our day who are looking. Now, they may not know exactly what they are looking for, but there are those who nonetheless are looking. We talked some. I told you a story about arms. You remember Arms, big guy I worked with, you know, who came to me and asked me, would I study the Bible with him? Backwards, you know, why hadn't I already said something to him? But I mean, he was just such an unlikely candidate. I mean, he was a biker dude. You know, the black hat, the leather, the big boots, and big and burly and very scary to me. You know, and I had never said anything to him, but he came to me and asked me to study the Bible with him. I don't want to make that mistake again. You know, I want to try to be ready. I want to try to be prepared to say something to other people, you know, so that we might study together. I said we're going to John. We're not really going to read anything from there. Just thinking back of some of the last things we studied and talked about when we looked at John chapter 1. I want to go on down here, the next portion of our page. We're on page 5. Jesus called the fishermen. Comments? Ray? Yeah. Yeah. Someone who's looking. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Interesting point. Yeah. No, we studied for several weeks, and I believe he came to understand truth. You know, which is what he was looking for. I'm not sure exactly what had caused him to start looking. He had a Bible he had been reading, but he didn't understand. And so he had gotten interested in that, but he needed some help. And I really believe he was looking for truth. And just as Jesus said, he who knocks will find. You know, I'm convinced those who are looking for truth will find it. But that does not mean that all who find truth will accept that. That's the difficult part, and I've had that happen several times. where there's been someone who has been so excited, they have come to understand truth, but then when they start to understand what it will require of them, when you have to start counting the cost, when you start having to look at the changes that may take place in your life, wow, there's been a number of folks who I believe had prayed for truth, had been introduced to truth, and then made a choice to reject truth. Whew, that's painful. Absolutely. Sorrow. He had so much he didn't want to give up. Right. That's right. You know, even if we are not, and it's true, it's hard to walk up to somebody and say, hey, you want to study the Bible? I mean, how's that going to go over? Well, generally not real well. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what's the best approach to go to somebody. But the fact of the matter is, some are better at going out and making contacts with people than others. That's a truth. But another truth is, we all have responsibility to be ready to give answer for what it is that has convicted us. And I'll tell you, I think that's where we really fall down. You know, when somebody says something to us and the door has been opened and we close it right back. Now that's us. That's a problem with us. You know, we can't influence everybody. And we may not always know what to do or to say to somebody to cause them to want to study. But if they are trying to push the door open and they're saying to us, hey, what about this? And we close the door. Oh, I don't know how we're going to give an answer for that. That's scary to me. That really is. That's scary to me. Absolutely. Sure.
It's amazing to me, as a tax professional, the number of people that come to me with Bible questions because they know here's a person that's a
God-honored. We talked about being a light unto the world. Jesus said it in Matthew chapter 5. That let your light so shine that we may glorify the Father. Remember we said it's not about us. We're not letting our light shine so people look at us. I mean, that whole wrong concept there. If we let our light shine, it is to glorify the Father. It's to glorify God. There's nothing wrong with people seeing in us something good. That they see in us holiness and purity, godliness. They should see that in us. And if they have some interest in spiritual things, who knows? They may come to us and say, you know, someone told me you know something about the Bible and I see the way you live and all. Would you study the Bible with me? Maybe they'll see something that would even cause them to come to us. It's like, as we've been talking about, you know, some of these first followers, Andrew and Simon Peter and Nathaniel and Philip, I'm just of the mind that Jesus didn't walk up to them and they had no idea who Jesus was. And he said, follow me. And they said, oh, okay. I don't think so. I mean, they knew something of Jesus. They had heard teaching. Or in the passage we're fixing to go to, Jesus was starting to become more vocal. He was starting to do some signs and wonders and miracles. He was building his own reputation. And when he goes to the fishermen now and says to them, follow me, they knew something of Jesus. I mean, he didn't just like walk out of the blue and come up and they had no idea who he was and he said, follow me, and they said, okay. That doesn't make any sense. Yes, that's right. Sorry. And now, I mean, word's starting to spread. I mean, the reputation of Jesus. I guess kind of where I was wanting to go with that is, I would like to think that we have a reputation. Well, obviously, we all have a reputation. Let's restate that. What is our reputation? You know, that perhaps is the more important point here. What is our reputation? So that should we go to someone that we know, it's a neighbor, it's a friend, it's a co-worker or something like that, and we introduce the idea of saying, could we study the Bible, or would you come to services with me, or whatever it is, we're not knocking them out of the blue and they're going like, wow, I didn't even know you were religious. You know, wouldn't that hurt? You know, if people didn't even know we are trying to live a life that's different. And so when Jesus went to these and said, follow me, he already had a reputation. They already knew something about who he was. And so that made it, I mean, and these were men, I'm convinced now, these were men, as we've already read, obviously they were looking. And when it was presented to them, they decided to follow him. That's the people we're looking for. And I'm convinced that there are people in this world who are looking. They don't even know what they're looking for. But they're looking for something. They're looking for a change in their life. They're wanting to be more spiritual. They know something about God, but they don't know how to get to him. Well, we're the ones that should be ready to help them get there. That's our role. Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. May not even know what it requires. But they're looking. Yeah. Yeah. Good points. Let's look on here. Jesus calling the fishermen. This is an interesting story here that unfolds. Two passages. We're going to Matthew chapter 4. That's kind of the shorter version of what's going on. Matthew chapter 4. And we begin at verse 18, Matthew 4, verse 18. And Jesus, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brothers, Simon called Peter, and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And they immediately left their nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, in the boat with Zebedee, his father, mending their nets, and he called them. And immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. The short story here is we see Jesus who is doing the calling, and there were those who were willing to follow him. It's in Luke's account we get a little more detail to the story. In Luke chapter 5, Luke chapter 5, first 11 verses found there. And it came to pass, as the multitude pressed about him to hear the word of God, he stood by the lake of Gennesaret, and saw two boats standing by the lake, but the fishermen had gone from them and were washing their nets. And he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, and asked him to put out a little from the land. And he sat down and taught the multitudes from the boat. And when he had stopped speaking, he said to Simon, launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. And Simon answered and said to him, Master, we have toiled all night and taken none. Nevertheless, at your word I will let down the net. And when they had done this, they caught a great number of fish, and their nets were breaking. And they signaled to their partners, who were in the other boat, that they should come and help them. And they came and filled both the boats, so they began to sink. And Simon Peter saw it, and he fell down at Jesus' knees and said, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. And he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish which they had taken. And so also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, do not be afraid. From now on you will catch men. And when they had brought their boats to land, they forsook all and followed him. Several things kind of go through my mind as I read through, you know, these stories. In a very simple way, I mean, in verse 19 to Matthew 4. It says, Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." What are some things that come to your mind when you think of that passage, when you read that? What is implied when Jesus said, "I will make you fishers of men"? Yeah, it's hard work. Yep. No easy road here. Rick? Okay. Yeah, priorities going to be changing. Yep. Earl? All right. But they can make an... We see the analogy here. The work that's involved, there's the idea of reaching out and pulling in and catching, you know, though it's changing to a physical, I mean, a spiritual story now, right? That's right. Everyone won't come to the net. All right? What else? Man, good ideas. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's true too.
If I needed it. And of course there is some times it's not appropriate, and other times it is. And I mean, those are kind of things you have to weigh as you go along in the relationship as well. As the evening came to pass, one of the folks that were there that I didn't know struck up a conversation about religious things and told me about his church and about Presbyterian and how they were organized and that they were Calvinistic in their understanding. Well, I couldn't just let that go. So I began to talk to him about that.
So you've got the hook here.
Well, there's some, you know, there's a fish to catch here. He was very pretty well versed in his understanding of Calvinism. But I went back. Talked about Romans 9, where it talks about Esau and Jacob, you know, God loved Esau, Jacob and hated Esau. Well, that's a difficult passage perhaps, but I had actually just looked at that because I knew that was one of the places that you could go. God chose Jacob to be saved and chose Esau to be condemned. It was that his purposes were going to be fulfilled Jacob
right.
regarding the seed promise and not Esau. And so the point I'm making, I'm not trying to be self-serving, but the point I'm making is that a lot of times we can know the situations that we're going to be, social situations particularly, or even
and you bait the hook.
Freshen up a little bit on what the conversation might be for a particular mm-hmm. and be better prepared to talk to people. Mm-hmm.
In different ways to do the fishing, you know, that's right. What do you think, I mean, we can see, I mean, there are obviously times where fishing was done with just one hook, and yet Jesus uses this analogy here with the net. What's the significance of that? What do you think that's about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Broad and wide, and mm-hmm. That's right. Or sometimes people, they decide themselves, don't they? You know, in that way. We read a passage a while back from Matthew chapter 9 where Jesus looks out over the multitude, and what did he see when he looked out over the multitude? You know, fields are white for harvest. Yeah, indicating that there's lots of opportunity. Yeah. That's right, sure. Kind of a broadcast for all. Yeah, yeah. So that makes me think about that too. You know, with the net, Rick.
Well, one other thing about the passage here in Matthew 5, I mean, Luke 5, Matthew 3-4, Jesus said, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." And I think you touched on this in the previous classes, but that becoming effective fishers is contingent upon following. And I think sometimes we don't follow him as perfectly as we should, and that's why we're not effective fishers.
Yeah, you think about some of these that he's calling right now, and he's saying to them, you will be fishers of men. These are some men who, you know, in time become some of the best fishers of men. And who did they learn from? They learned from the master teacher. They learned from Jesus. Well, in essence, what we're trying to do now is learn some things from Jesus. About, you know, what did he do to call others? Let's look through some of these questions here. Just briefly, I want to get your ideas on some things. I think we already mentioned this here. What is implied when Jesus said, I'll make you fishers of men? Quick answers. What would you say? Now, it's not that hard. What is implied when Jesus said, I will make you fishers of men? Just a couple quick answers.
As opposed to fishers of fish.
Yeah. The importance, the scope here. You know, it's like, hey, we're not talking about these fish. We're talking about men. We're talking about saving men. The importance of the work, I think, is kind of one of the things that come to mind. Those who are called, we have the brothers, Peter and Andrew. We have James and John, the sons of Zebedee. Some who are going to be some of the closest associates of Jesus. To follow Jesus, what must these men be willing to give up?
Everything.
Yeah, everything. This is kind of an interesting thought and concept here, too. They drop their nets. I mean, this is their livelihood. I mean, think of the significance here. I mean, that this was their security, so to speak. I mean, you know, most of us with our jobs, we find certain security in that. Knowing that there's a paycheck coming here at the end of the week or every 2 weeks or whatever it is, you know, or at least they're going to have fish to eat. You know, I'm not saying that they were rich, but they had their own business, you know. Nothing here to indicate that they were wealthy in any way. But whatever it is, they were giving that up, you know, to follow Jesus full time. That's kind of interesting to me. You know, that's some significance here. Why would they be so willing to follow Jesus to the exclusion of all other interests?
If they fully understood who he was, then they understand that to give up everything else pales in comparison.
Yeah. And I think they did understand something. You know, could this be the Messiah? They were looking for something. And they knew that Jesus was different. They knew something about the old scriptures. You know, they were looking, and they have found him.
He related to them by having the net cast and catching all those fish.
Yeah.
On their level.
Yeah. Interesting point.
Right there.
Interesting point.
That got their attention.
I mean, when you're studying and talking with someone, you have to have some common ground in your teaching. If you're going to use examples, it needs to be something they understood and or understand. These men understood something here about these nets being full. You know, it said something about the power of Jesus. They'd been fishing all night, and they had caught nothing. And now with Jesus, I mean, they knew something was up here. You're right, it was at their level. That's right.
There's a recognition.
Yeah.
That this is somebody.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And a willingness to submit to that. Yeah. Good thoughts. What else? Credibility would be all. Yeah.
He went out and said, cast your nets on this side and go come out before it catch. When they knew there were no fish to be caught there, but Jesus, they went out anyway. And Jesus' reputation in their eyes, it instantly was validated.
And so their faith in anything Jesus would say has just increased exponentially. You know, I mean, they evidently already had some faith, so to speak, in Jesus because they did what he said. But imagine now how they felt when all the fish were caught. Daryl. Hadn't even thought about something like that. Good point. You know, yeah, that's right. We're just standing in the boat. Man, I like that. You know, and the thing is, we have the net. It's not about us. We have the net. But we're going to have to use it. Interesting.
When it comes to fish, you know, Jesus could have commanded the fish to jump in the boat, certainly he had the power to do that.
No doubt.
But we are creatures of free will. He will not force us against our will to serve him.
Yeah.
We must come to him because we choose to.
Yeah. Yeah. And some things we can go with that. I mean, just like with the four disciples that are now following. All of whom have had to give up something. When Jesus said, follow me, Jesus didn't, you know, bend their arms and force them in any way. They had to make some choices as well. Good thoughts. Very good thoughts here. Why would Jesus call men who were so busy? I mean, why didn't he just go over here to the side, someone who was sitting at the city gates, you know, waiting maybe with a cup in his hand, you know? I mean, here's somebody who's got all the time in the world. Isn't that the case? I mean, I've always heard it, and I understand it so much more, you know, as time goes on. You want to get something done, ask a busy man to do it. You know. Good point. Yeah, that's right. I'm not sure if she was trying to make a point about Barry, but I don't know. I'm staying out of that, you know.
I think we've heard the statistic that 90% of the work gets done by 10% of the people.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah. That's right. They understood. And I guess really, you know, to some degree, you know, Jesus is saying there's a lot of work to be done. You know, you're going to have to go out. You're going to have to get to work you know, to do these things. Probably little did they know what kind of work was before them. You know, but they would find out soon. Let's look at page 6. Page 6, a couple of passages here we're going to read. Matthew chapter 9 is where we're going. Matthew chapter 9. Jesus is still calling men, beginning at verse 9. And as Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax office. And he said to him, "Follow me." And he arose and followed him. And so it was, as Jesus sat at the table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" Okay, verse 12. But when Jesus heard that, he said to them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." Parallel passage, Luke chapter 5. Let's look there. Luke chapter 5. Verse 27. And after these things, he went out and saw a tax collector named Levi sitting at the tax office, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he left all, rose up, and followed him. Levi gave him a great feast at his own house, and there were a great number of tax collectors and others who sat down with them. And their scribes, and the Pharisees murmured against the disciples, saying, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "Those who are well do not need a physician, but those who are sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." All right, let's see what points and application we can make from this. Luke chapter 5, verse 28. And he left all and rose up and followed him. Kind of following the pattern of some others, the fishermen that we have seen. Jesus called Matthew or Levi to follow, and he did. What's the significance here when it says that Levi left all? What would you say? Could have been. Tax collectors had this reputation of having some money. They did well, it seems. And you're right, a good point here. You know that he invited Jesus to a feast, and there was a number of his disciples and others who were there too, other tax collectors. Interesting.
And I think we have to understand the term leaving all as accommodating, because he still kept his house. People still had a house. But it's what their priorities are, what their hearts set on, it seems to me, is what they have left.
Good point. Well said. Well said. What else? I don't know. Yeah. Took a while to commit it to happen. That's right. That's right. Could have been. Could have been those who were working for him. Very true. But what we can see already, and of course what we see as time goes on, is his diligence, his dedication in following the Lord. What's this deal about the Pharisees, you know, as they look at this feast that's going on? What would you say to their comments and the response of Jesus here? I mean, they're murmuring against Jesus eating with these tax collectors. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think this was, perhaps it is one of the first times that he's starting to deal with, let me say it this way, starting to deal with some of his own people, some of the Jews. These were some of the ones, though, that thought that they were so righteous. And this is one of the first times, perhaps, Jesus is saying, you know, you're not as good as you think you are. You know, I mean, these Pharisees would have looked at these tax collectors and just wrote them off, you know, as sinners. You know, they wouldn't have tried to teach them. I mean, they're way down here on the social scale, you know.
And so sometimes they dealt heavily with those that had some money in order to make their cut bigger. So they weren't always of good reputation. And this was looked down on them as not a very good threat.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting, though, that, I mean, here we've had fishermen called who have followed. I mean, I'm not taking that to be like an upper class type of position, okay? And now we have tax collector who is being called, who is not thought well of by most. Yeah. You know, and so, I mean, who has put them just in the class of sinners? Why is your master eating with these sinners? Okay, so, I mean, from the view of the Pharisees, these are low-class people, you know, that you are calling here. And so, the response from Jesus. What would you say about the response from Jesus, you know? I mean, what did Jesus say? Is he saying the Pharisees weren't sick? Yeah, they don't see. Yeah, they think they're just fine. They don't see themselves as sick. Yeah, they needed healing. They recognized their need of healing. You know, it's interesting to me that there are those who are in sin who seemingly recognize that they are in sin. They know that their life is amiss. They know that they won't stand before God in a favorable way. And sometimes they want to do something about that. But we don't always go to them. I mean, but sometimes we very well could be acting like the Pharisees.
Well, it's a lot easier to communicate with somebody you have more in common with. And that's why I think sometimes we think our denominational friends are the best prospects. Because, you know, they already accept the Bible. They're willing to talk about it. But I don't think that's the
case. I have noticed that very often, if you're having an effect in a community, if you can do door knocking and it works, which is so hard for that even to work anymore, it seems. But I've noticed it seems that churches that are growing very often are in areas or are drawing from areas of less affluence. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, the more affluent the area, it seems, the harder it is to make converts. Reckon why? And I think we can very well come to a point where we think we don't need anything. We're just fine. When we are in the greatest need. Just something to think about. I mean, I, as I stand here thinking for a moment, it's hard for me to think of a time I've gone to somebody's house for a Bible study, and it was a really nice house with wonderful decor and offered tea and crumpets as a snack. You know? Yeah. You need to hang with me a little bit more there, Earl. Yeah. But I tell you what, I've been in some people's house where when I got home, Sandra said, "You stink like smoke." And I said, "Phew, you're right," because they were smoking. And there's a beer bottle laying on the floor over here. And it's just a pretty uncomfortable kind of situation. But for some reason, we kind of got connected together to have a Bible study. I can think of instances such as that more than I can going to a house and you ring the doorbell and the butler opens the door and says, "Yes, can I help you?" I've had zero experiences such as that. Just some things to think about.